Ian Golden is a professor and the director of the Oxford Martin School at the University of Oxford. He was vice president of the World Bank from 2003 to 2006, and formerly he was chief executive and director of the Development Bank of Southern Africa and served as an advisor to President Nelson Mandela. His book, The Age of Discovery, catalogs the unprecedented rate of change we are all feeling and looks back to other times in the world's history for understanding and guidance. Hello, Ian. What a pleasure. Welcome to our show.
It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Ian, we live in a time packed with new possibilities. You know, we've never been better equipped to seize them as well. The problem is that many of us just don't feel it. There's so much negativity in the world today, and yet you say this is the best time to be alive. Well, it certainly hasn't been the easiest. Why is it the best?
That's right. It is the best in so many ways, and yet we don't feel that. It's the best because all of our chances of living longer, healthier lives are greater than our parents and our grandparents. Our average incomes are higher. Our access to many choices and freedoms is higher. And that's not only true if we live in the USA or in Europe. This is true in many, many countries around the world. The world has transformed just really fundamentally over the last 26 years or so since the Berlin Wall fell. Markets have spread around the world and opportunities have spread. And so people are leading longer, healthier lives and are better off in more places in a more rapid way than ever has happened in history. And yet we don't feel this.
Yeah. Is it something about the rate of acceleration of these changes in our lives that are creating this upsetting feeling within the population?
I think it is. There are a number of things happening. One is when change happens more rapidly, people get left behind more rapidly. Because if you aren't able to change, if you aren't able to change jobs or move home, go to where the jobs are, or you don't like the changes, you get left out of change more rapidly. So inequality is growing in many countries between people who are able to benefit and those that aren't able. And the sources of uncertainty and complexity are growing as well. So our national governments no longer are able to shape and protect our future in the way they used to because the world has become so interdependent. What's going to shape the lives of Americans in the future or British people in the future, and where I live, is things that are happening on the other side of the planet. And so both the opportunities are much greater, but the sources of risk have risen with that, and the complexity. It's really very difficult to understand a world of 7 billion actors and now 5 billion connected to smartphones, right. 5 billion literate people with new powers and new possibilities compared to the world we lived in only 40 years ago when only about 500 million people were connected and they were mainly in the rich countries.
Let's go back to another time in history when there was a period of tremendous change. You write about the Renaissance and we all know of the great art and ideology that came from that time that has lasted to today, but we forget that that was also a period of tremendous disruption. Can you enlighten us, no pun intended to the Renaissance, can you enlighten us as to what conditions were back then, what the changes were, and then what the opposing forces were as well?
Well, the reason I wrote this book, Age of Discovery, with my co-author Chris Kutana, was because we felt that we now live in a second renaissance, and that the period that's going to help us gain perspective on these tumultuous times we live in is the period of about 500 years ago. And that was the most extraordinary time. It took Europe from being one of the most backward places in the world in the 1450s to being the most advanced place by far within 100 years, driven by an information technology, then the Gutenberg Press, which essentially made books and pamphlets, advertisements, very cheap and in people's own languages for the first time. So there was this hunger to learn, to be literate, and ideas traveled much more rapidly. And you had this explosion of science, suddenly scientists discovering that we went around the sun, not the sun around us, Copernicus and others. You had this extraordinary breakthroughs in arts, in perspective, the Michelangelos, Da Vinci's, Botticelli's, and many others that we celebrate 500 years on. And of course, the voyages of discovery. So from a 1450 belief that Europe was the center of the world that basically fell off to nowhere very close by to a round world with Mercator's projection of the world. Only Australia left out by 1550, and of course the discovery of the Americas. So it was the most extraordinary time, the most rapid time of change, and yet it ended in tears. It ended in the bonfire of the vanities, extremists taking over and deposing the Medicis in Florence. Well, jihadists, we would call them today, in their beliefs. Luther pinning the treatises on his church door, attacking the corruption of the Catholic Church, the indulgences that allowed people to buy their way to heaven, and finding that these ideas went viral, and he started a new religion. And so you then had religious wars, you had the Inquisition, you had a pushback. And so this period of tumultuous change ended intolerance and extremism in the hounding out of foreigners, of Muslims, of Jews, of the killing of homosexuals. And all of these different groups had been coming together and were indeed the reason why the Renaissance happened was because of this coming together of people in the Renaissance cities. So the discoveries were destroyed, and of course Europe was set back. And what we can learn from that period is many things about how these periods of tumultuous change can lead very, very quickly and very surprisingly to these rapid reversals. And we feel in the UK with the Brexit happening last week and UK referendum, very surprisingly for most commentators, British people deciding to pull back, to become more nationalist, to become more protectionist, to withdraw from integration. A very similar sort of trend happened 500 years ago in the Renaissance. People scared of change, people wanting to go backwards in many respects. And we feel as well that the similar things are happening in the US. The extremism growing on the right and the left of politics, ideas of protectionism, anti-integration. And so we live in this very paradoxical world where we are much more interdependent and our future opportunities and jobs lie in being more connected, as well as in managing the risks of terrorism, climate change, pandemics, cyber attacks. And yet we want to be more insular. And of course, we want to put the clock back.
Ian, so let's slow down a bit and get some more context here. So we definitely hear your ideas with regards to the parallels between the Renaissance, and yet those powers of change continued despite the setbacks and the extremism. And you say that it came to tears, but yet European culture, Western culture marched on. We're in a period today where I don't think there's anything that's going to stop the rate of scientific discovery, the rate of social interaction through social media like Facebook and others. Yet we are seeing this pushback. What can we do differently now from what we've learned from the Renaissance in order to avoid some of this ending in tears?
Steve, I think your question is absolutely the right one. I think one of the things we can learn is to understand why people don't all embrace change and why some people are so angry and why the social fabric of our societies is being torn apart. And why are people rushing to extremist ideas? And there are a number of lessons we can learn about that. The one is this point about when change happens, a lot of people's lives actually don't improve. Many people in the Midwest of the US today are not going to escape poverty or get a job any quicker than their parents because they're being left behind in this process of rapid change. So it's very important, I think, to focus on things like housing mobility, job mobility, transport infrastructure, working out how are people going to get to where the new jobs are that are happening much more rapidly than in the past. How are we going to protect people that are being left behind? How are we going to give them education systems to enable them to be more flexible? How are we going to create more flexible economies? Because you have to be more flexible when change happens more rapidly. I think we also need to understand that these extraordinary opportunities come with extraordinary new risks. And so managing interdependency, what does that mean? It means managing the threat posed by terrorism or the threat posed by cyber attacks or climate change or pandemics becomes a much bigger priority for governments because these things are now more dangerous. The third thing I think we can learn from the Renaissance is the power of individuals, polemicists, people who are able to amplify their voices using new technologies. Then it was pamphlets, it was the new print form. Now, of course, it's social media and others. And they can put the clock back. We could see a growth in protectionism. We could see legislation, against some technological changes. We could see a much more divided and fragmented world. Even a new Cold War is being seen as a prospect. So I think there are real dangers here, and these dangers emerge when people who are benefiting don't work hard enough, I think, at bringing everyone along with them and allowing these extremist voices to pick up on the resentment and the anger and talk about a world which is very different to an integrated world.
Let's talk about that for a moment. So there is a social contract to a degree when you have levels of society, and in a free society with people able to achieve whatever level they can, there is going to be certain amounts of inequality. Let's just speak about income, for example. And that's part of the capitalist system. Yet when the degree of inequality gets to be so extreme, then in essence, you write that there is a social contract that is broken. And in a way, it tears apart this idea of unity as a country, unity as a society. Help us understand that.
I think that's absolutely the case. Inequality, I think, is acceptable, but it's a question of fairness. When bankers pay themselves big bonuses after leading to a financial collapse, which affect our jobs, or when CEOs of companies who have no profitability pay themselves big bonuses, or when they park their incomes in offshore tax havens and don't pay tax, or their companies do that, we, I think, rightly feel this is unfair, that they are evading their social responsibilities. We don't mind if an iconic musician or sports star earns a high salary because we feel it's fair. So I think accepting that we have understandings of what people can and cannot do and what's acceptable is very important in this. And then accepting that we all have social responsibility. If we are doing incredibly well because we are able to capture the benefits of a new technology as the people in Silicon Valley are able to do, or we are able to benefit in other ways from this extraordinarily rapid pace of change, we need to accept that there's some people that are unable to do that, not because of their own faults, but because they just happen to be born in the wrong town.
Yes.
Or they have the wrong skill, or they're too old, or they're looking after an elderly parent or a young kid, and they can't move towns to where the job is. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is all about social responsibility, to ensure that these people don't stop the changes because they're made to feel worse off by them.
My guest is Ian Golden. He's a professor and director of the Oxford Martin School at the University of Oxford. The book is entitled The Age of Discovery, and it speaks to the unprecedented rate of change we're all feeling and looks back to other times in the world's history for understanding and guidance. You say that in this world, with this distribution of learning and information through social media, that genius is also flourishing. And if genius is widely distributed around the world as people come into the world through technology, we will benefit from more geniuses having more access to change the world.
That's absolutely the case. And one of the reasons why this is such a wonderful time to be in, the best time in human history and the new Renaissance, is because there's just so much more brain power unleashed in the world. 3 billion more literate people in the world over the last 30 years. More scientists alive today than all the scientists that ever lived in history. More literate people alive today than all the literate people that lived in history. And so we're going to see this extraordinary explosion of talent and acceleration of innovation. Today is the slowest day your listeners will have for the rest of their lives. The pace of change is accelerating. And it's going to come from very different places because of where the new brain power is being released. It's going to come from China and India and many other emerging markets, as well as the US and Europe. So we should expect more change. Many of these changes will be wonderful. They will improve our health. They will improve our opportunities. They will create all sorts of new things, many of which we have no idea of what they are yet. But with that as well, of course, comes risk, because there's also bad genius. There's bad creativity. And what we see is this growth of the power of individuals to create mayhem. And that's, again, one of the tumultuous changes of our time, where individuals can really create terror.
Yes.
And other things. And so managing this change and ensuring that individuals feel that they should contribute to society understanding where the risks are is going to be a bigger responsibility if we're to harvest these incredible opportunities of this renaissance.
We just have a few seconds left. Pessimism is in vogue. Anger and despair can be infectious, but courage is infectious too. Tell us how we need to understand how to change our thinking in order to improve upon the situation and not just feel powerless and in despair.
Well, I hope that the concept of a new renaissance is one that will make people feel optimistic, because we know the renaissance was this amazing time led to leaps forward for many dimensions of humanity. So this is the best time to be alive. We should feel incredibly excited about the possibilities, which include eliminating many of the terrible diseases that afflict us today, eliminating poverty in the world, and addressing many of the big problems that have challenged humanity for time immemorial. So it's the best time, and this certainly could be the best century ever, but it's also a time in where there's a contest of ideas like never before. There's a contest against the risks which are going to threaten these opportunities. And so I think the choice is ours, and we need to be more active, more engaged, understand more. And I hope the book helps your listeners in thinking about these choices and themselves taking the actions they need to make this our best century ever.
The book is The Age of Discovery. My guest, Ian Golden, a professor and director of the Oxford Martin School at the University of Oxford, and has served as an advisor to President Nelson Mandela. Ian, thank you for spending your time with us today.
Steve, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you. All the best to you and your listeners.